Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon, and I'm really excited to interview someone who I met recently at a Women Empowerment Conference. Glad to introduce you to Ildi Arlette. Ildi is a business consultant and business coach. She's an advisor to more than 350 medical aesthetic clinics in the field of derm, plastic surgery, med spas. She is such an intuitive business coach. She's going to teach us all the things that are holding us back, how to bring our businesses to the next level. And welcome to the podcast, Ildi.
Thanks, Dr. K. I'm so happy to be here.
So, Ildi Arlette, what's the name of your actual business in Canada, just so we can get that out there in case people want to look you up? And I want everyone taking notes. We're about to reveal a lot of important stuff about how to run your business.
Yes, my business is called Results Continuum Inc., or RCI. And people can find us at resultscontinuum.com or on Instagram at Ildi_Arlette. I'm based in Canada and I work with clinics all through North America, and I'm actually celebrating my 20th year serving med spas this month.
Wow. So, you know, the whole med spa industry, the drama, the growth, the explosive growth of aesthetics. It's been really amazing. We're on this uphill shoot, like a rocket trajectory. And I think the only way for people who are starting out to get profitable and build the practices to differentiate, to be different. And you had a really good quote. You said you believe focusing on the patient experience and using what you have are the pathways to being profitable and becoming an uncopyable clinic. I thought that was a really impressive word, uncopyable. That's what you want to quote. So tell me a little bit about that. What's that about?
Well, that's what everybody wants. We all want a business and clinic that is unique, distinct, stands out, brings the right people. So we all want to be uncopyable. And I always think of the fingerprint image that, yes, we're all these people. It just fascinates me that everybody's fingerprint is different with almost 1 billion people in the world. And so you think, wow, there's got to be enough space for me and my business. Yet, so many med spa owners are asking, how can I differentiate? And I like to sort of answer that by saying that, you know, I don't know if you ever get asked the question when you're presenting or talking with people, are there too many medical aesthetic clinics? Are there too many med spas? Like, is the concept of saturation? So I think that we don't have a problem of saturation at all. I think we have a crisis of authenticity where it is not only so indescribably stressful for the business owner, for the med spa owner, but it's terribly confusing for the very people that we want to attract and serve, our clients and patients.
I kind of feel like LA, Los Angeles has a lot of saturation of aesthetics, and there's some distinctive pearls, but not that many. And sadly, like, people who are just starting out in aesthetics, they also, it's like high school. They just want to be like all the other girls starting. So they want to be and do and copy and emulate. And like, everyone has pink gloves. I feel like I started that, but now it's everywhere. So now I have to innovate again. But how does a new person starting in aesthetics build a brand? That's such a big concept. And I know when I was starting, I did not even think about building brand. I was just barely trying to keep it together. And will I have enough to fund the payroll and the rent? How do you start thinking about brand?
I think that I would always encourage people, and I ask them the question of, you know, why now? Why do they want to start a business? And it is a challenging question for people to answer. You can imagine I've heard every answer in 20 years. And it's particularly an interesting answer from medical professionals. And sometimes I think of medical, the traditional doctor's office medical model and the business model to be a business or really service to be like oil and water. It's oil and vinegar. And so I'm looking for the emulsifier. I'm looking for the Dijon mustard to put those two things together. So I think the place to start is asking, not very deeply. I don't think there needs to be like some big life commitment reason of why do you want to do this? But sometimes an easier question is why now? And there, I really listen for something in that person's answer that is about them. I know they are passionate and committed to serving people, helping people, keeping them healthy and well in some way. But I really want to understand why this human being, when we strip away the title, wants to do one of the most proven, difficult, overwhelming, unpredictable things in life, which is to start a business. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about branding, our process that we've been using for the past 20 plus years with our clients is a process that really has three parts. It's know yourself, know your team or your resources or network, and then work towards the goal. And so I think to build a successful brand, you don't actually start with the goal. The goals are often external, like I need a logo. What are our brand colors? So a lot of what things look and feel like on the outside. And to be completely honest, that's where we're taught. That's what everybody's taught. You know, have the pink glove, have the logo, have where's your office going to be? How are those treatment rooms going to look? What about website, digital? And that's fine. But when you've had the privilege, like both of us have, to watch this extremely long runway that we've been on now, which means that we can look back and say, how did everybody who did that do? The things I hear is, you know, I kind of like our logo, but it's time for a rebrand. I hate our website. It's not up to date. You know, we're not doing things how we want. And all of the commentary seems to be about the external. And we're saying that that three-step process, know yourself, know your team, work towards the goal. The goals happened in a more aligned, more leveraged, efficient way when you've done the first two, which is to look at yourself as a person and really do an honest assessment. There is no such thing as a business person or entrepreneur, although we talk like that, because I've never had a client who was really good at all of the aspects of business. So I'm more interested in knowing all the aspects of business, like you said, staffing, hiring. I don't know, what about paying taxes every year? That'd be a great idea. Branding, marketing, leadership, all of it. What parts do I like really excite me about doing that I feel aligned with? And why that's important is because everything that comes from it, if we're looking at you from that mind and from those authentic natural skills and desires, flows through your team, gets articulated, whether you're conscious or unconscious of it, it flows the entire articulation of your business, from the gloves you wear to what the restroom looks like to what your outside external brand is. And some people really understand that and they're comforted by the fact that, you know, this business is going to be an articulation or an extension of my thoughts, my beliefs, my values, which, by the way, I think people spend sometimes too much deep dive seeking those answers. But maybe we can talk about that. But they just start and open a business. And so where to start with branding should be internally with the person or the small group of people that are thinking about opening this business. And then we want to ask, how do those answers inform our external brand and what that looks like? And if there's one thing I want to tell people, like, they have choice. They don't have to do what everybody else is doing. They have choices. Mm-hmm.
There's a paradox in that, because some people focus so much on the external and how things look in every detail down to the bathroom. And it's all about the pretty and the aesthetic. And they don't have enough focus on like the solid character of the practice or the science or the results and quality. So it's really important to deliver both, I think. I think, like you said, one of the hardest things as a business owner is learning like the fundamentals, like how do you do payroll? How do you do taxes? How do you do setting up, you know, writing an employee manual and having a business plan and a business budget? It's very challenging. You must have at this point a workbook that you give people to how to break down business.
We do. I mean, we discovered very early on, I discovered because I hadn't worked with a lot of physicians, but I worked with a lot of executives in the corporate world. I worked with a lot of luxury hotels and those executive teams and hotel owners who were, you know, building properties and wanting to have an amazing guest and customer experience. And then, because I got into to our field completely by accident, I was doing a service excellence or customer excellence workshop, and two people in my audience had been invited by actually by someone from Allergan to say, hey, why don't you go and hear this speaker? And at the 10-15 break, they both ran up to me and said, here's our cards. One was from a leading med spa in Toronto, and the other one worked for Allergan. And they said, every medical aesthetic clinic needs to hear about this concept of service excellence. For me, I don't differentiate between the guest, customer, client, or patient experience. It's all the same, even though I know it's hugely controversial that a lot of plastic surgeons, Dr. K, they don't enjoy and completely disagree. I want to know what you think when we say it is customer service, the patient is your customer. And they're like, no, they're not our customer. It's a patient.
Yeah, it's a customer. The customer, because even if they are your patient, and patient is first in my head, they're treated as a patient, but in their head, they're a cash paying customer who wants to have like a concierge level experience every single time. And customers are very demanding people, as we all know, as we are ourselves are picky, demanding customers. Like I am probably the most picky. So I really go out of our way to try and make it a good, smooth experience. But we have, sadly, like all these medical hurdles too, because trying to run a test schedule on time and then suddenly a woman faints because it's a patient and patients do that. Or suddenly a woman will unburden her soul and tell you like she's getting a divorce and you cannot rush that visit. You just can't. And so you have to be both. You have to be a customer service and a clinician. It's challenging.
Well, for sure. I wish I could figure out.
You need a thick armor. I just want to say that in the process of building a brand and bringing all your heartfelt feelings to this brand and decorating it beautifully and all that, then you take every single insult so personally, every negative review, every critique and criticism, and every day you try hard and feel like it's hard to deliver and you're probably a people pleaser like I am. And so it really stabs you when you can't please everyone. Please everyone.
Well, that point about people pleasing, I mean, that is it. Most of us are recovering people pleasers. And so now think about going into the service industry, because that's what we're doing. Yeah. We're delivering a service which represents to the paying client an experience. And in fact, early in my career in serving clinics, there was a real attitude that I got from the physicians around, you know, somehow our medical knowledge makes us superior to this business process. And just around the questions and our topic today, I am here to sadly tell you, it does not exempt. Your medical knowledge does not exempt from exactly what you said. I mean, we are teaching clinics, what are the foundations of a business? And there are six functional areas, right? From HR and everything involved, like payroll. Can I make payroll?
What are the functional areas?
I can name a few here. We've got HR. We have the tech and equipment focus part. We have marketing. We have finances. I have to look at my cheat sheet over here. But we talk about those functional areas. And they're not a secret. I hope anybody who is listening or watching feels free to literally email and say, send me that. And start to really write them out and understand, like, your marketing may be different from another clinic's marketing and branding. And so I would love people to understand that if they start with a point of how they want to be perceived and in the business, that's what informs the brand. And to your original question about branding, sometimes we have to draw the full circle of branding for a client. And we have to say everything you've talked about with client around developing logo, website, you know, getting a sign for the outside, that is one tiny piece of the pie. That's a really slim, small piece of the pie in terms of what their branding actually is. And when you and I started, there was no digital, there was no Facebook, there wasn't even MySpace. Mm-hmm. So you were 100% reliant on, you know, other mostly print forms, but that patient experience spoke very, very loudly around would people come back or would they advocate? But now what I'm seeing is, of course, with digital, so many clinic owners think that they understand what it is to run a business. we've had the privilege of pulling that curtain back, like Wizard of Oz, and seeing that there's many, many levers. They're not equal. And I guess the beautiful opportunity is that they don't have to be equal. Your marketing can be, your efforts and resources can be more toward marketing than another clinic who may decide, you know what? We want to deliver our services and treatments and products in a way that really does rely mostly on word of mouth. And that's how I want to do it. Because otherwise what I see is people spending like a ton of money and a ton of sleepless nights and worry and self-doubt, because when the experience of, you know, external marketing and branding doesn't work after you've hired the fourth provider or, you know, fourth person, it really impacts the lens through which they see. They think there's something wrong with them, that maybe they don't understand branding or how to manage a team or how to make people, why that even matters. But
it's very challenging because you build it, you think that you build it and they will come. And you have to have that mindset because you can't not build it. But then you have to be able to fill your chair. And the days you don't fill your chair, every day that there's empty spots or empty appointments, you really are sensitive and you feel it. You did a little thing at the Women's Empowerment Seminar where you had people write on a piece of paper four quadrants of the page. What was in each quadrant as a quick home exercise that our listeners can do?
It is one of the most all-purpose effective exercise that any clinic owner or practice manager can use. The boring name is called the quadrant exercise, but people usually rename it. And it's an excellent way to take a real-time individual assessment for yourself or everyone in the clinic. So take a piece of paper, divide it by four, or contact us and we'll send it to you. Mm-hmm. And in that first quadrant, the question is, what are you doing that you're really digging, you're really liking and enjoying? And you write that out. Second quadrant is, what are you doing because you have to do it, or maybe you think you have to do it, but you're not digging? And this is where, Dr. K, people write answers and they're like, can we use the back of the sheet? Because there's so many things I'm doing in my business that I can't stand.
Yeah.
But I think I told the story then, true story, because I am also a former clinic owner. I own a large clinic with my partner, with 22 staff. And, you know, what happens when your injector writes in the things she's doing but not digging? Filler.
Oh, gosh.
For real. That's true scary story.
Yeah. You buy a laser, yes, right?
Yeah. Or a laser tech that writes, you know, two different, what do you do?
Exactly.
And so this really challenges us as a business owner and team leader to say, am I equipped with the skills to do it? It isn't even knowledge, but if you think of the functional areas, you cannot be skilled, nor do I ever recommend, I'm interested what you think. I don't recommend that people become bookkeeping experts in their own business or payroll experts. I think it really saddens me to see how much, I call it sort of long division, long form hands-on there are from clinic owners, where you look at their Instagram and it is star celebrity status, but behind the backgrounds, they're packing their own gift bags, they're doing their own books, they're, I can't believe, I call it like the manual labor of what's happening. And so I don't judge it. I love to roll my sleeves up and do the work for events, for whatever else, but it is simply not sustainable. And we're starting to show signs of that overwhelm to say, how do I keep this up? But more disturbing is to say, well, wait a minute, I have 10 staff or four staff that I'm paying to do these things. So my question is, how come they're not doing it? And that's when you come back to yourself to say, maybe there's a skill set here that in all my genius in medical school, I was not taught. And that is the basics of business. And then the permission to be allowed to run it how I want, like based on proven principles, like not getting like super weird creative, because that's the pitfall, right? Of wanting to differentiate, that you start to practice some crazy business just to be different. But I really like what you said, filling the chair. So do a timeline. If filling the chair is the outcome, what steps need to happen? And if more than half of those steps are some kind of internal marketing or external marketing, like, we need a better website. We need to post more. If more than 50% of those are external marketing, you're missing the rest. So, which is fine, but then you've got to go for it. So what am I doing that I'm digging? And I'd love to do more of.
That's box one and box two.
What am I doing that I'm not digging? Okay. And number three is what am I doing that I'm not digging, but I don't want to do anymore. And then this is terrible, but if you, I will get you it. We might have to cut this portion out and edit it. I can never remember the fourth one because people, I'm sorry, the third box.
This should be like things I never want to do again or what?
Is things I'm not doing that I don't like that I'm actually not doing anymore. Like I finally delegated my day-to-day receipts to a bookkeeper or I finally delegated.
Let's edit this little section. And then do you want to say box three and box four again?
Yes, I will. But I will also take the time to honor your question by opening this up.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, Kay, do you see crazy, crazy things out there that people are doing to differentiate their clinic?
Yeah, all the time. I mean, like, you know, filming crazy videos in the operating room, and I try to unfollow all those bad pages, but
totally.
It's just, yeah.
Okay, so the quadrant activity box one is what I want more of. So I'm doing it and I'm really loving it. So things you're doing that you enjoy and more of this is welcome. The second part is what I want less or none of. And that's where we say you're doing it, but you're not loving it. You're not digging it. So things that you're doing that you're not enjoying, or ideally you'd want to get rid of this. And I hear a lot of wishes, like I wish I could get rid of, you know, having to do my bookkeeping. I wish I could get rid of having to review all social media, whatever it is. But again, true story of, you know, a former clinic owner. I owned a clinic with my partner with 22 team members. And what do you do when your injector writes in, as I told the story, that what they're doing but not digging is filler? And again, there's a skill set that practice managers and business owners like yourself that need to have that through no fault of your own may not have to deal with that situation. But the third quadrant is you're not doing it and digging it, meaning things you'd like to do, but you just are not. You don't have time. You don't know where to start. Like you might be overwhelmed, right? So what you want to bring this particular thing into your life. So for example, someone might say like, I've always wanted to work with someone who would write our social media posts or someone who could be a thought partner for some of the ideas I have floating in my head. And then the fourth quadrant is you're not doing it and you're not digging it, which means things you don't want to do and are no longer doing. And there, if someone's really taking like good stock of who they are, what their role is in their clinic, they don't usually have a lot to write in there. The place most people are writing to start a good self-assessment is quadrant one and two. What are you doing that you love and you would welcome more of it? Like, what would it be for you, Dr. K?
I love seeing patients who really understand that beauty should be curated, and kind of my high value patients who've seen me for a few years and they come in and they just say, well, we'll do whatever you think I need. And, you know, within reason, but they have a bit of a budget, so we can use two or three modalities to help really address upper, mid, lower face and not doing too much, just the right amount, but just having a free hand to be artistic with a person's face and spend like a good hour chatting, engaging. And like, it's just kind of a great relationship. It's like me seeing my favorite friends for years and years and just, you know, maturing relationship. And, you know, I would love to be able to do that where I just kind of see my favorite people, 5 or 10 patients in a day, just very luxurious, long and intimate appointments that are very artistic, and then do a lot more creating. I like to do content creation. I like to create products. I like to innovate. I like to write. So I want to bring out that side of myself in the next few years.
I mean, that's an amazing answer. And there's so much just in the first answer, because you talked about seeing a certain type of patient, what you do with that patient, but you also mentioned something about loving to have just the openness and availability of time. So not rushing. And so something about the duration of your consult. And so many people kill that off and they go, well, I can't do that. And that all or none thinking for all business owners is a killer.
Yeah.
It's an idea and business killer. Is the a good question would be, you know, tell me more about those people you do feel like this is a friend coming back to see me. We're still doing procedures, whatever. But the question is, could there be a certain type of appointment in your practice where, or days or reasons why you do have that availability of time without running like crazy super late? And that's what begins discussions, right? Like you said, you're creative, you'll come up with it, but it doesn't need to be an all or none.
No, and it takes time to evolve it, because definitely I had a patient who told me she was some kind of therapist or life coach. And she said, why don't you envision your ideal life? And then why don't you create it? And I just looked at her like, I don't know why I don't do that. Yeah. I am working my fingers to the bone, seeing like 20, 30 patients a day, hustle, hustle, hustle. Don't eat, don't drink, don't pee. I can't sustain that. And so slowly her words sunk in and I started to adopt things in my life where this year, for the first year ever, I'm not coming in bright and early at 8:30, because aesthetic patients, they don't come till 10 or 11 anyhow. So I'm taking my mornings to be free, to do a little exercise, to do a little walk in the garden, to get my own thoughts together before we become very reactive, where you have to react to people blasting you with questions, blasting you with emails. You forget your own creativity and who you are and what your thoughts are. So this year,
amazing.
Myself that space. And I'm doing a lot of creating stuff in the mornings and then doing like longer patient appointments in the afternoons, but I'm still failing on the end of, we always finish late. I always run late. I always do too much. I overcommit. So it's a process. I'm envisioning the life and it's starting, and maybe this will be the year I work out and get muscles and stuff. That's my next big goal.
Is it?
But gradually your goals shift away from, in the beginning, it's about survival. Will I make payroll? Will I make rent? Can I keep my chair full? I still have all those concerns. And it's scary as your business grows, your payroll blossoms and it becomes this weight on your back, where before you wanted to have income for yourself and your family and put your kids through school. And now you need income to help all of your staff. Like you're feeding all your families. To me, that's the biggest pressure as an owner. Is I love these people that work with me and I'm taking care of all their families. And so that means not that many days off until, like you said, someone with your kind of background brings you in to like, okay, it's time to clone yourself, bring in more providers. But yes. The complexity of hiring more providers and having HR and contracting. Yeah. And
it's a trade-off, isn't it? It's a huge trade-off. When somebody says they want to do a business expansion, that's probably the time when, because people come to us for two reasons. Something's gone wrong, something small that feels really big, or something really big's gone wrong, or they're excited and they're ready for some kind of growth stage. And they're like, I want to expand. And then around those same issues, you know, that's the beautiful part about business is there is a portion of it, but some technical parts that you can predict. So for example, okay, you want to take on new space or build a bigger space. Let's actually look at what your payroll would be. And let's look at how full does that chair need to be. But what's so interesting about what you just said, Dr. K, is I will say the majority of my clients are locked in to a very fixed mindset that I blame the medical model of efficiency, both from a business and output and productivity. But also I want to give credit to the heart. Some people are like, I just want to help as many people as possible. I'm like, right, to the tune of like your family life's basically hanging on by a thread, you're feeling ill. And what's interesting is if and when we get the chance to look at even just the top surface of finances, you can start to see a decline. So I just don't know people that can, you know, run that sprint in marathon style. This is what people are doing. They're running a sprint in marathon style. Or they're running a marathon in Prince style. And our work brings us to is exploring, like, are you a sprinter or are you a marathoner? What does that look like? Some people have the ability to do both, but then it informs who you need around you to help run these parts of the business, because, you know, you do end up caring deeply for those people and you have a responsibility to provide a livelihood. So my clients don't think, they think, wow, and they have this great vision and I can physically see and hear that they're excited. But then, as you said, that impacts the 10 weeks that they take off a year, or not feeling like I have permission to take off a day a year. And so when people say, I've got my consults jam-packed, like 45 minutes each or half an hour each, or I'm in the room for 15 minutes, whatever, it's very counterintuitive, but it's easy to show people. For example, there's a strategy or a way to create what we call a buffer in your practice. And this one, like, usually makes my clients start to perspire when I describe it. They're like, I can't understand this. But your clinic is an amazing example of loyal people who love coming to see you. And of course you, but everyone, it's a whole experience, right? So the buffer is saying, what if every day at a time that we work together defined in your clinic, but let's say from 2 to 2:30 in the afternoon, you don't book any appointments with any provider. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, wow, this is usually when my clients go from like a Jekyll Hyde situation. They're lovely people, but if you have one gap in your day, I start to see a different side of people where it's not okay. So you're like, why would I do that? And the reason is because if you look at the fundamental structures of business, the cost of constantly spending resources, time, energy, money, digital, real, whatever it is, to get that patient in more frequently is far more than serving the patient you already have. Yeah. So it means that building a clinic culture where we cross promote or we cross sell, and you honor me, the patient, by taking advantage of my time to talk about what else, what's next, that actually makes more money and more money to put in the bank than it does to do this constant branding, marketing treadmill profitable. Yet what we see is if you're looking to grow your injectables or grow your laser, that's the way to do it with the client who's already there. She's already there. You're already with her. But the interesting part it does is it makes the clinic mutually physically available to say, you know what, let me go get Lindsay. The concept is that we're not talking about doing this with all patients, although I really hope clinics are being efficient by paying more attention to the client who's already there. That's why we say, like, we're teaching clinics to use what they already have rather than just processing people through a day to get a full chair. So if you think all those patients who come in between 1 and 2 p.m., you have the opportunity for all of those patients, at least 30 to 50% of them, to introduce one more option. What does that look like? So what it sounds like in real life is, instead of saying, why don't you rebook when you go to the front and come see Lindsay? She's an amazing laser tech. You actually can say, if you have 5 minutes, I can ask Lindsay to pop in and talk with you now. So what we can show you is the increase in revenue and profitability, because you're using what you already have when you have it, and your patients love it. Because if they need to go out because they're going to miss their Pilates class or pick up the kids, that's fine. You know, most of our clients are great. They're not going to push people toward anything. But the opportunities of that buffer zone are, every one of our clients has been profitable with that. And how can not booking appointments for that half hour bring me more money than less? But here's my invitation to everyone. If it's a huge mistake, then put it back.
So easy to try. It's important to experiment and try things in your schedule. I want to also kind of mention, what are 3 key numerical numbers that people need to know for their office in terms of revenue per hour created or revenue per provider? Like, what are 3 really good analytics that will help check the vitals of your practice?
I hear that question a lot, and I hear generally the same answers, like, here's the 3 to 5. So it might be things like your conversion rate, your new client acquisition rate. But my challenge is, Dr. K, is when people follow that advice, and if it works for them, by all means, it's intended to help you feel and know where you are. Like, am I doing well? Am I not doing well? But my question to that question is, even if you knew those numbers, which it takes some work to get, not a lot, but still, what difference will it make? What will it do for you? So, you know how when you and I met in our presentations, we talked about when, what's important now? And I think if you're running a social media campaign or you're running a course or anything, pay attention to what's happening now. What's important to measure about that now? What I see is people saying, well, we ran an email campaign with our clients for a particular service, and we only had 6 people book. First of all, I like to say we already have 6 people booked, because clinic leaders are unintentionally demotivating their staff to say we're doing poorly, we're behind. It's that whole mindset and energy, and it feels a bit disengaging. So we already have 6 clients is to say, okay, about this event or campaign, measure that now. But the standard answer is we do measure, what is your conversion rate from phone to booking? What is your conversion rate between booking, the consult and treatment? And people sometimes want to do revenue per room. I have to say, after 30 years in business and 20 in this industry, and we used to serve all kinds of physicians and health and wellness businesses, the only ones that really makes a difference to is dental, because their software lets them count production hours and revenue per room. Some softwares and aesthetics do that as well. But what is the difference? So even if you knew that, the technique of buffering the schedule so you have more time to provide service, to cross-sell and upsell, so the patient can get a better result, not so you can do revenue per room. And to be honest, Dr. K, I mean, we're business, but we own a business. We need to pay our team. We, you know, I'm at these many years, and I too think, wow, what will next year look like? I've learned to trust the process more. I've made a lot of mistakes, which means I've learned a lot of great lessons, you know, helping people and being in communities with people like you that you can learn from other people's lessons/mistakes as well. Are your staff interested in your production, your revenue per room? They're not interested in that. So
they're not. No, but as a business owner, I think entering into a recession, especially, and also for me to be sane, I want to understand every day when I open the door, what's the cost of opening the door? It's the rent, it's the workers' comp, it's the how many employees at 20 whatever dollars an hour are sitting there. So for me to just open the door every day, each hour costs a certain amount. And are we bringing in revenue for those hours? And when we have a half day where there's no patients booked, that's a very expensive day. When I take a day out of the office.
Absolutely.
So it's important, I think, as a business owner to understand that, like, what does it cost to exist?
The thing is, though, you said, can I use your half day example? Are going to be half days when there aren't people, but we like to look at the long game, because half days happen that if you have 10 staff who all get 2 weeks vacation, that means your clinic is, quote, short-staffed or understaffed 20 weeks per year. And the mindset of scarcity, I know, you know, and we're showing people to say, I don't say that to like scare people, but to your point, as a business owner, you want to know, as a consultant coach, I want us to prepare for that.
Yeah.
So the only thing you're absolutely right. If that half day isn't there, but what I'm working with are people who are terrified of that half day, but then that ties you to your business that says, we only make revenue when you're there. So it's like
a big mindset change that you have to have. In fact, you need a half day for an administrative paperwork day and just a sanity day where you can go to the dentist or visit with your parents or whatever. You need a half day in your life. And so you have to learn to book it that way from the beginning, and you have to value your free time, and people have to get used to you not being there half day. So that's why it's just important to know in your budget, like, what does it cost to operate? Even if there's no patient around operationally, what's the revenue when I turn on the power here? And then what's the spend? And then also, like, on an average day when I'm seeing 3 or 4 patients per hour, what's the average amount of revenue we bring in? Because then it can, you know, give yourself some comfort. Some days you have to work harder, some days less hard. Absolutely. I have no idea what the solution is, but
I know.
Okay, so that's all really good information. Are there any other data points or metrics that we should really be cluing into for our offices?
Yes, one relates to the point we just talked about, which is, you know, do I need to know the revenue per room per hour? And the answer is, if you answer the question first, what's important to that about that for you? And then you said, well, what's important to me is payroll. What's important to me is, you know, overall revenue and expenses and knowing how hard an effort to make or not. Then I would actually say one important metric is ask your bookkeeper, if you don't already have it, and ask them the question, I'd like to know for my clinic, what are my fixed costs and what are my variable costs? Fixed costs is what you, you know, my rent, my lights, my heat. I have to pay a website to be maintained. I need insurance, all of those things that are fixed. We can't run a business without them. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know, let's say that that's $5,000 a month. That informs you in a more open way to say, okay, well, I know at minimum, we need to bring in $5,000 of revenue. But what I find, Dr. K, is then the clinic owner takes it upon herself. Okay, I need to produce 5,000. I'm like, wait a minute, you actually have two service providers or six, and your men are also service providers. So how do we divide it out? We're absolutely, yes, you're the key revenue generator. So a lot of that's going to come from you. But how do we use the rest of the resources, like your staff, who you're paying, how do we utilize them to increase and meet more of that $5,000? And then your variable costs, your bookkeeper will know what that is. But that is, I think, you do need to know. I do think you need to know your payroll. You need to know what, ask your bookkeeper, would you please send me what my total payroll was for the last year or last 2 years? And don't worry if you've had variations and stuff. All my clinics have had some turnover for some reason. But what's really interesting is we do a lot of compensation reviews for our clients, which is, how much am I paying everyone and what kind of trajectory are they on? Because we think we're paying a lot for staff now. Wait till you calculate 3 and 5 years from now. And so that's fine. Maybe we kind of feel a bit nauseous when we see that number, but we plan to say, how do we make it so that this person
can help that ship?
Exactly. But we're
it's crazy. It's all about being artistic and giving to your patients and enjoying the craft that we do. But also, I think work is work. Work is overrated. You have to have a life. You have to get out of this office and live a life and feel that you're not tied and you're not the only person running the engine here. So that's so important. I've had a very hard time doing that because it's like your baby that you're building and growing and nurturing. And it's really important for people to understand those metrics so that they can get the time and freedom. Because after all, why do we go to work? We go to work to beautify and to have good long relationships, but we also work to live a good life, to have time, freedom, and energy to go do the things we want to do.
Well, this is it. It's hard to do when you're starting out. And I will say, you know, it is not supposed to be easy and seamless. And I don't care what people say at conferences or what they say, you know, worked for them, didn't. And that's why I love the community that you've built. There's an entire spectrum of views of how people did things. And I think the smart business owner seeks out learning from within their industry, but works with people who are also have a broad view of what's happening and saying, like one of my favorite questions, if you were to absolutely know that you would have good revenue and profitability, how would you run your clinic if it was a luxury hotel? Let your mind go, because all my clients, like you, they're you stay in these places and you know what great service is, you know how to deliver what people want. But no, we get down the rabbit hole of branding, marketing. Do I have to post every day? And so the privilege of this long runway over here has been seeing people succeed using all kinds of methods. I do kind of get some energy that says, Ildi, tell me the best method. I'm like, if someone's going to tell you the best method, they're not telling the truth. What they meant to say unintentionally is, this was the best way for me in this season of my business. Yeah. And so I love the concept of seasonality, and you've referred to it a dozen times already in our conversation. When I started out, then I learned, then I adjusted and I experimented, and now I'm in this phase. So a big question would be is, how do I start a clinic or run my clinic in this season of this business And not to have a spoiler alert, but this season of your business represents your season in life. And I absolutely adore your mindset and perspective on saying, it's really the question, have we built a life around this business? And for most business owners, it's actually yes. Well, how's that turned out? What lessons? What do you wish you knew before? But it's different for so many people. Those foundations are the same. But when people share, I wish I would have known X, what's interesting is when I ask, what stopped you from doing that at the time? 90% of the answers are around what I call psychological permissions and mindset.
So much of this discussion about building your business and growth strategies is not about numbers and analytics and metrics. It's about the psychology of how you think. And like you said, letting your imagination go. If you could build anything without worry to the cost, what would you create around yourself? And then working it backwards, how would you create it? I love your idea of creating a business plan for those seasons. Like the beginning injector, year 0 to 3, and then the 3 to 5, and then the 7 to 10 year, and then the 10 to 20 year. Like it's such different, really different approaches to growth strategies. So you should definitely do that. It'll be
I think too, I want to give permission people that if your season is between now and the end of August or beginning of September, when your kids start school or when you go on summer holidays or when you're going to take a course, that is completely okay. Like, I think it's okay not to know where you want this thing to be in 7 years or 5 years. But I do know that human beings work on the method that generally where their focus goes, they do bring to fruition. The fascinating part for me is it mostly happens unconsciously. And that makes me question, where are we getting our messages from, our how-tos from? What communities are we hanging out at? And my wish for everyone is that they would attend some of our industry conferences, but challenge themselves once a year to go to a non-industry. You want to learn about social media? Don't come to our industry conferences. You could list them all. Go to a social media conference and hang out with the hotel people and the hot tub people and the retail people. And I absolutely promise you. You will come back with so much and they're fun and you'll know what you need and you'll use it when you need to know it.
I'll definitely do that. I will go to one. We should go to one together.
I would love to. I have actually a list of great, great recommendations, but when I invite you on our podcast, Dr. K, I'm going to be asking you, how would you run that clinic if it was a luxury hotel? Because I just know there's going to be gold.
I think the difficulty is that I have such a great imagination and I build it in my brain. And then implementing it is very hard because working with humans is very hard, especially millennial humans is very hard. And having millennial children and being surrounded by millennials, I love them to pieces. I just don't know how to think like them. So I'm evolving myself every day because I want to build that luxury into our brand and into the experience, but it takes... I don't know about you, but I feel like I have to overlook and like I'm growing each employee also to that luxury level because they don't all come in at that luxury mindset level.
It's so true. The most important thing about what you just said to me is the fact that in your answer, you demonstrated self-awareness. So it sounds like you love and are strong on the ideation part and the part where it's the what next is the implementation. And
that's
so
that's right. The execution and implementation. So that's what I need to evolve to, is creating the idea and having someone execute it to perfection.
And I mean, what do you think? Like, that takes a set of skills.
It does. It takes a lot of skills and things that we don't learn these things in school or anywhere else. Business school I didn't go to. Even if I did go to business school, I'm not sure it would teach me like those kind of action items.
Agree, because there needs to be some trial and error. You might remember the slide that I showed during my presentation. It's a learning slide. This is how much we learn from theory. This is how much we learn from doing. And this is how much we learn from mistakes.
And she's showing us visually, if you're listening, like, you know, little bar graph, which is like 50% is theory, 75% is from doing, and then probably like
90%. Almost 100% of that graph is from mistakes, errors, failure, which is still taboo, et cetera. But a really first good place to start is to say, if you called your epic failures lessons, what lessons came from it? And that's what helps you experiment and adjust.
learned. Yeah.
Is somebody asking you the question, what is stopping you? What did stop you? What would you do differently? And I would love clinic leaders to learn those technical leadership and business skills of how to ask those questions. And mostly, Dr. K, wishing that as business owners, we didn't take it on ourselves to have to find those answers. You have halfway decent to awesome teams. There are whole other brains and people that want to give input. And I know sometimes that input is out there and you're like, why did I even ask? But really healthy workplace cultures are one where people contribute. We don't contribute at the same level. They're not all able to, maybe generationally, there's a factor, but the real person says these team are a resource and I'm going to utilize. Interesting, if you look at the data for workplace engagement, people want to make a contribution, but we assume that the contribution has to be to my business vision. And unfortunately, that you mentioned millennials, so I'm going to go there, but not just for millennials, Xers, all of it. It doesn't relate, but I will tell you that every single team member, maybe a few exceptions with the toxic ones, they want to contribute. So the challenging question is, how can I create an environment? What steps can I take where they can contribute? And these are the questions, hopefully, that people listening or watching can think, oh, so when I'm watching a show or I'm at a conference or reading an article, you want to listen for those questions, not what is the best way to fill my chair, because it doesn't honor the human being, you, who is carrying this enormous burden, to say, if you described your way, how would you want to fill that chair? And it really doesn't matter if people don't have the technical knowledge. They generally have a sense their answer comes from who they are. Mm-hmm. I sometimes have to challenge clients and say, whatever answer they gave me, how did you arrive at that answer? And were there external influencers? And often, sorry guys, but often the men will tell me, the male physicians, well, I talked to four of my colleagues at conferences this year, and this is how they said they did it. Mm-hmm. It is not this guaranteed reproducible success. It's very intimate and personal. And back to the beginning of our conversation, that's the way to be authentic and distinct. And your clients and patients will recognize it right away. And they'll know if it's for them or not.
So true. This has been such an enjoyable discussion. And I really loved all the learning process. Learning about how to make your clinic profitable and uncopyable is so important. It truly starts with your vision for what you want in your own life. These are a lot of deep internal questions you have to ask yourself, and you need someone like a good friend or a mentor. You should get in touch with Ildi and have her give you some coaching advice. Because when I sit and think about how I want to make things happen, I do think some subconscious part of your brain starts enacting those things. And you will eventually get there with help from great people like you. Where can people find you on your various handles to get in touch?
So they can find us on Instagram, and it's Ildi, I-L-D-I. _ Arlette, A-R-L-E-T-T-E, or they can, honestly, people can email me, Dr. K, as you know. I'm not too busy and I'm not too important. So it's Ildi@resultscontinuum.com, or go to the website resultscontinuum.com.
That's where you're going to get all these amazing pearls. If you have a chance ever to hear Ildi at a meeting, definitely go. It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. Okay. I hope you learned a lot about building your practice, thinking internally what your practice goals are. You can find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, D-R-K-A-Y. And our website is the same, www.beautybydrk.com. That's where you can find our skincare and amazing new beauty greens powder. So check that one out. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful and uncopyable.